in the leaked draft opinion that would overturn Roe v. Wade, Justice Samuel Alito writes that, quote, our decision concerns the constitutional right to abortion and no other right. Nothing in this opinion should be understood to cast doubt on precedents that do not concern abortion, end quote. So many pro-abortion rights activists and others have raised concerns that if Justice Alito's reasoning stands when the court hands down its decision this summer, many other rights could be at risk. That includes same-sex marriage and relationships, access to contraception, and interracial marriage. The Roe v. Wade decision argues that under the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, people have the right to seek an abortion. That amendment has been used to establish many other rights, such as the right for same-sex couples to marry, the right to use contraception, and the right for consenting adults to have sexual intimacy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have concerns that if this ruling as written stands, it could bring other rights, other past rulings into question on things like same-sex marriage, interracial marriage, other big Supreme Court decisions over the years? Join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Sarah Benish is an associate professor and chair of political science at UW-Milwaukee. Her work focuses on the Supreme Court. Sarah, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, as I mentioned, in this leaked opinion, Justice Alito said, hey, no, this is just about abortion, not any rights unrelated to abortion. Can you talk about that part of his, again, draft ruling and how it could or could not apply to these other precedents I mentioned?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Justice Alito is very careful to note in a couple of places in the draft opinion that this applies only to abortion. But I think it is fairly simple for him to say that and a little bit harder to argue that some of the holdings in this draft opinion would not also apply to same-sex sexual intimacy, contraception, same-sex marriage, those kinds of issues. The court in this draft opinion really delve into the history of the right to abortion. And their argument is that the right to abortion is not protected in the Constitution, and only those things that we can say are deeply rooted in our nation's history are so protected by that 14th Amendment's liberty interest. Once they dive into the history, then they find that there have been abortion statutes on the books since the 1800s. And so for that reason, the right to abortion isn't something that would be protected. You might be able to tell then that if we were to apply that same reasoning to something like same-sex marriage or even same-sex sexual intimacy, we would also not find there to be any sort of historically rooted right.
Can you talk about the use of the 14th Amendment in these kinds of cases where, in effect, they say, hey, we, the federal government, via the court system, is going to say, hey, you, the states, you can't restrict these rights, even though they're not enumerated in the Constitution. These are some liberties that you don't have the right to overrule. Can you talk about that as a basis for a lot of these decisions we're talking about?
Yes. For a long time, the Supreme Court has interpreted the 14th Amendment's Due Process Clause as conferring substantive rights. That's not uncontroversial, and that's something that Justice Alito talks about in his draft opinion, because the words of the 14th Amendment protect process, right? So you can't be deprived of life, liberty, or life, liberty, or property without due process, meaning you have to go through certain steps, that the government would have to go through certain steps to take those things away from you. But the court has over time found that anything that we deem to be intrinsic to our ordered liberty, something that without which our nation doesn't have the characteristics that we think our nation must have, anything that are fundamental rights are also protected under that due process clause of the 14th Amendment. And so something like privacy, which we all sort of expect as a human right and expect in terms of our ability to choose how to live our lives, is not something that's in the Constitution, but that the justices have found to be implicit in our system and something that is fundamental to our experience as citizens. So anything that the court has deemed to be intrinsic to our ordered liberty, something that's fundamental, deeply rooted in our nation's history, has been deemed to be protected by that 14th Amendment's Due Process Clause, even though it's nowhere explicitly stated in the Constitution.
Now, Justice Alito, again, says this applies only to abortion. We're not talking about this other stuff. Some people have pointed toward Justice Alito's dissent in the Obergefell decision. That's the same-sex marriage one. making exactly, if I understand this correctly, I'm not a lawyer, making exactly this argument that no, the 14th Amendment shouldn't apply here. So could that come up in a future challenge, say a state law restricting against same-sex marriage?
Yeah, that's exactly the argument, right? That if we are to take this position, which is also shared by Justice Thomas, was shared by Justice Rehnquist in past courts, that the 14th Amendment confers only that procedural due process, then anything that doesn't have a constitutional textual basis would be open for state decision making. So, of course, the draft opinion doesn't take away the right to abortion. It just finds that it's not protected by the Constitution, and so leaves open the question to the states to make those decisions. That would also be the case with same-sex marriage.
Sarah Benish is with us, associate professor and chair of political science at UW-Milwaukee, looking at this draft Roe v. Wade decision that would, if it stands, if it goes into the summer, would overturn Roe v. Wade and what it means for other precedents that people may have taken for granted. Same-sex marriage, the right that this idea that states can't restrict contraception, for example, and more. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Jack is with us in Milwaukee. Jack, hello.
Hello. The reason I'm calling is that going back on a little different angle on this subject, one thing that's bothering me is that we also have constitutional guarantees in the practice of religion, freedom of religion. And I'm not a Muslim, for example, but I do understand that they don't consider a fetus really a whole person until the end of the first trimester, when you receive the number of breaths you're going to breathe, your talents, and your soul. And so the question that I'm getting into here is what's the foundational argument on the part of the court on freedom of religion versus interfering in this whole process of telling people we may or may not have an abortion, either at state level or federal.
Jack, thanks for the call. Sarah, I've seen some people argue, people who support abortion rights, for example, who argue there may have been better avenues to pursue it. Jack saying a religious liberty angle.
So I'm struggling to try to think of the ways in which the religious liberty would play into the abortion question. Obviously, this is a highly moralistic issue about where life begins. And that is something that Alito explicitly says in his draft that he's not going to take part in the discussion over. And the Supreme Court has generally kept itself away from that decision. But of course, the statute at issue does call the fetus an unborn human being. And if states were to choose to delineate the fetus as an unborn person, then we'd have to get into a question of whether or not the Constitution confers any sort of rights on unborn fetuses as people. And that's another, you know, entire can of worms. But I think in terms of the freedom of religion, you know, in many ways, it's not implicated here because no one's being forced into any sort of decisions about abortion. And so I'm not exactly clear on where those things lie, though obviously a lot of opposition to abortion is religious in nature.
Thanks for the call, Jack. Deborah joins us now in Minnesota. Deborah, hi.
Hi. I'm concerned about Alito's saying that there is no history of abortion in the U.S. At the time the Constitution was written and ratified and the Bill of Rights was added, it was just common practice that a woman could end a pregnancy up until the point of quickening. And the Ninth Amendment should protect that right because it says that, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage rights retained by the people. So why didn't he take that into consideration?
Deborah, thanks for the call. That historical argument from Justice Alito, I have seen other people, Sarah, make the case that there is some tradition of abortion being allowed in the early United States. What do you think of what Deborah had to bring up?
Yeah, I think that's exactly true, that there were abortions allowed. And in fact, this question of quickening was one that Justice Alito talked about in the draft and many states grappled with as they had their various iterations of abortion laws over time. But that's not exactly the focus that Alito is putting on this question of whether or not the due process clause includes a right to privacy or to an abortion, because what he's looking at is whether or not there's a deeply rooted history in this country of recognizing a right to abortion. So allowing for abortions, the fact that they existed at the founding, that's all true. His contention is that there's no deeply rooted right that's protected by the Constitution under that 14th Amendment's Due Process Clause. Of course, Deborah pointed to the Ninth Amendment. That's where a lot of the justices over time have deemed the privacy protection to lie. But the majority of the court has really focused most of its attention on that 14th Amendment due process right. And the way Alito's reading it in the draft opinion, it has to have some evidence that it's deeply rooted in our nation's history, that that right be fundamental in nature.
Deborah, thanks for that call. Sarah Benes is with us, associate professor and chair of political science at UW-Milwaukee, talking to us about other legal precedents that could be in question if Roe v. Wade were to be overturned. You can join in at 800-642-1234. As we've heard, same-sex marriage, access to contraception, interracial marriage, all rights established using in part the 14th Amendment's Due Process Clause and the right to privacy. Are you worried that those rights could be at risk? Do you have questions for a guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up the conversation with Sarah Benes, associate professor and chair of political science at UW-Milwaukee, who studies the Supreme Court. We're talking about the draft decision leaked that would overturn Roe v. Wade and whether the ruling could affect other court precedents, lots of them potentially. You could join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Sarah, another precedent that people bring up is the case of Loving versus Virginia. I think a 1967 decision that said, hey, states, you can't outlaw interracial marriage. Justice Alito looking for this historical guarantee. He looks at the timing of the 14th Amendment just after the Civil War. Could somebody make a case based on that, like, hey, interracial marriage wasn't the norm, wasn't necessarily allowed then, so we could challenge it now?
I suppose someone could make that case. I think that particular case is probably the hardest one to make, even under the Alito ruling. I think the idea that marriage has a deep root in our history is fairly clear. And so the right to marry is a very strongly recognized and fundamental right, even though, again, that's not in the Constitution. So I think it would be more difficult to make that case in terms of interracial marriage than to say make the case that this opinion would also have some ramifications for same-sex sexual intimacy, for example. So I think in those cases, the Supreme Court did much the same thing as Alito's doing here with Roe. So rather than recognizing and focusing on a right to privacy or a right to bodily integrity, Alito's really focusing on a right to abortion. In the same way, an earlier court in Bowers versus Hardwick focused on whether or not there was a fundamental right for homosexuals to engage in sodomy. And they found that there was no historical right, which is not surprising to anyone, right? When the court overturned that decision in Lawrence versus Texas, the court then instead focused on a fundamental right to sexual intimacy. And that was something that was far easier for them to find in our sort of historical context. So I think that, you know, that's a much closer corollary to what Alito is doing here with abortion than interracial marriage, although I don't think that this draft would be without implications for those kinds of questions.
Now, you also pointed us toward a ruling that I'm less familiar with on the right to refuse medical treatment, the case, a Cruzan case. Could you tell us what that was and how it fits in here?
Yeah, I think that case was really focused very carefully on this right to bodily integrity and found that there is a fundamental right that does exist and is deeply rooted in history of a person to have bodily integrity, to be able to refuse medical treatment. And the court, the draft, I keep saying the court, this is a draft by Alito, doesn't talk about Cruzan in their draft opinion. And so sort of sidesteps this issue of this really fundamental and deeply historically rooted right that we have to control what goes into our body, what is done to our body, and those kinds of issues. And again, I think the focus on whether or not there's a deeply rooted fundamental right to abortion leads him to the conclusion in a way that focusing instead on a fundamental, deeply rooted right to bodily integrity would not.
Talking to Sarah Benesch from UW-Milwaukee, looking at the leaked draft Roe v. Wade overturning ruling and what it might mean for other precedents in the U.S. Supreme Court. Still time for your call at 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Steve is with us in Chippewa Falls. Steve, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. You know, my question is about whether we can pass a law that essentially codifies abortion rights in the United States. And from what I can tell, most Americans would support that. But also you can make this to meet your today's topic, you know, to codify the right to gay marriage or any other one of these subjects that you're entailing. And my question is this. If a law is passed by Congress and the Senate and signed by the president, that's the law then, right? I mean, or does the Supreme Court have the ability to say, no, that's not the law? Because it seems to me that an abortion law, you know, something in the style of a European abortion law, could pass the Senate. We already have Murkowski and Collins bringing forth a potential law that more or less codifies Roe, with the exception of a very, very late-term abortion. And it seems to me that even my friends who are pro-life would, at some level, they'll be on board for like a 12 or 15. My daughter's here, but I'm going to let it go at that.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. Sarah, I mean, part of the argument in the courts sometimes is, hey, this shouldn't be the courts doing this. This should be legislatures. But our caller raises the question, you know, if Congress says, yeah, abortion access has to be legal in all states, could a state still challenge that? And maybe a Supreme Court say, no, Congress, you can't do that.
I think the Congress certainly has the ability to consider that kind of legislation, provided it has the political will to pass it. And of course, we know that that will be difficult given the makeup of the Senate in terms of a filibuster-proof majority. And yes, the Supreme Court could then consider a challenge from, say, Texas or Oklahoma that suggests that that oversteps the federal government's power. And so then the Supreme Court would have to decide whether or not the federal government has the power to put forward that kind of a requirement. And of course, it would depend on what the wording of the requirement said and those kinds of things. But yeah, certainly the Supreme Court, through Justice Alito's draft, is talking a lot about the role of courts versus the role of legislatures. And their contention is that when the Constitution doesn't forbid something, that those are instances when the states and the elected representatives of the people need to be the ones to take action rather than the courts.
Thanks for that call. Sarah, on a wider note, one question here is, how willing is the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn precedent because the makeup of the court is different, saying, hey, the five of us think the seven justices back in 73 just plumb got this wrong? Do you see potentially this conservative majority on the court being a little quicker on the draw when it comes to being willing to do that kind of thing and overturn past rulings?
Yeah, that's good spotting, Rob, that it seems like there's a difference in the makeup of the court over time. And that's why we see differences in the makeup of the court's decisions over time. So it's absolutely the case that the ideology of the justices and their preferences and their interpretive strategies for the Constitution matter to the outcomes that they reach. And when a majority of the court is no longer in line with precedents that are, especially precedents that are old, the court really doesn't have a whole lot of a problem overturning those precedents. And so I think the fact that Roe versus Wade has stood as precedent with some revisions after Planned Parenthood versus Casey for all of these years without overturning, even though many solicitors general and many other litigants asked the court to overturn it, suggests that there's something special about the makeup of this court. And I think we are all recognizing that this court has a larger majority that is of conservative bent than any court we've had for a very long time. And so it's not at all surprising that this would be the time that they would start to look at overturning this precedent and others.
In just our last minute, what would it look like for new precedents to end up at the court? Will we see things like abortion has been over the last bunch of years, where states pass things to try to get them to the Supreme Court to put them to the test? Or could we see things like that, for example, with same-sex marriage?
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's every time we have a major and divisive public issue, there are litigants that are in that are ready and waiting. There are attorneys that are ready and waiting to test the limits around whatever rules the court puts forward or whatever sort of situation the new court looks like it might be open to. And so this statute that the court is considering in Dobbs out of Mississippi is one of those statutes. There's a host of them across the country. There have been lots of regulations of abortion over time that have provided the opportunity for the court to make policy if it chose to do so. And so I think if this draft ends up to be the final one and Roe versus Wade is overturned, we'll see lots of test cases coming up through the courts to try to look at those other issues that you've raised as potentially being implicated by that decision.
Sarah, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Absolutely, anytime.
Sarah Benish is an associate professor and chair of political science at UW-Milwaukee. Sarah studies the Supreme Court. She joins us today to talk about the possible broader legal implications of overturning Roe v. Wade and other Supreme Court precedents that might be at risk now.